Welcome to Your Turn. This is Mike Causey. Delighted to have you with us. And I apologize in advance if I hack or wheeze. I've been coughing all morning, so it's nothing fatal, but it may be irritating. So I apologize in advance. Got a really good show for you today. We're going to be, as always, following the money, looking at what the White House and the Congress have planned in the way of deficit reduction, specifically as they are targeting federal workers, postal employees, retirees, and military people as well. There's going to be something bad in this for everybody. But and my leadoff guests are Steve Watkins. He is editor of the Federal Times, and he'll be followed by Sean Riley, who's a senior writer at the Federal Times. Steve, are you with us?
I sure am. Good to
hey,
be with
thank you.
You
for coming on. And I see the promo that I did for this show. I said it could have been worse. What the White House had proposed for federal workers, and in a relative world, it could have been worse, and it very likely is going to get worse. Is that the way you read it?
Yeah, obviously, there's going to be more shoes to drop on all this, but you're exactly right. I think a lot of folks were fearful that they were going to see deeper cuts to retirement, health care, and pay, such as a lot of the proposals that we've been talking about in past shows that have been components of past deficit reduction negotiations, such as transitioning from high 3 to a high 5 retirement calculation, moving to a chain CPI, which is basically lowering the cost of living adjustment for retirees, and fixing healthcare premiums to the GDP growth, which obviously would hurt a lot of feds over time. But none of that happened. And as you mentioned in your plug, there was no additional pay freeze. So, but what we did see was something that obviously people are going to still have some heartburn over. That is a increase in the pension contribution, which, by the way, was far less than what again people had been talking about in the past. The discussion on a pension contribution increase was revolving around a 5% figure that feds would basically be paying 5% more of their salaries towards their pensions. What the White House is proposing is a 1.2% increase, so quite a bit less than what had earlier been discussed. And then in addition, it would eliminate for new employees the FERS annuity supplement. And basically, that's a supplement that FERS employees, retirees get. If they retire before the age of 62, they get a fraction of what their Social Security benefit would be if it were calculated below 62.
Yeah, so this is all relative, and I know that it irks some people sometimes. They don't want any change, and federal workers say with the two-year pay freeze that has been imposed upon them, they've done their share and they should move on. But that's probably not realistic, is it?
No, not in this environment. Obviously, everyone is screaming to cut budgets and reduce the deficit, and the politics just is not going to allow things to stop at a 2-year pay freeze. And I think most people, if they had to be quite candid, would admit that, including the unions, who obviously are the ones shouting the loudest about the sacrifices feds have already made. And clearly they have. 2 years of pay freeze is hurting a lot of feds and probably driving quite a few to consider retiring. But I think you're exactly right that, we should expect to see a lot of these additional cuts in retirements, health care benefits, and possibly in pay to be proposed later on, probably by the Republicans. And, I think my personal speculation anyway is the White House, pulled back on its initial proposals in this area, anticipating that certainly the Republicans would come back with far more severe proposals.
And that makes them look like, again, relatively good guys in the eyes of federal unions if they would go along with this and even think about proposing it, but they're just maybe just wait and let the Republicans take the heat?
Yeah, I think so, and we can't obviously lose sight of the fact that we're clearly in election season right now, and will be for quite a while. So yeah, certainly that calculation is at play, I think.
Well, I hope for I'm sure you're getting the same things we are. A lot of people they're not panicking about this. They're not worried. Some are irritated, but a number of them have said, "Hey, you guys are a broken record. You've been talking about this forever and ever." And I told one lady from the IRS this morning, I said we were going to try to back off on that in part because, as you say, the first shoe has dropped. The White House has made its proposal, and we really the other one probably won't drop until about November 23rd, correct?
Yeah, and you're referring to the
committee. Super committee. Yeah.
And that's when we should get some details in terms of, you know, what the deeper deficit reduction proposals are going to be. And, you know, it remains to be seen, of course, but I think we will, you know, probably, you know, everyone should expect to see more in the way of proposals to cut federal pay and benefits.
What about the continuing resolution? The fiscal year ends this month, September 30th, and the government and federal agencies have been living off continuing resolutions for several years now.
Yeah, I think that's another huge frustrating quality of life for federal employees, that their agency budgets are extremely unpredictable, and they, except for the fact that they're going down.
Yeah.
Sean's been following this a lot more closely, and certainly you should ask him. But basically, this is Congress is going to be out on break next week for Rosh Hashanah, so there's a lot of scurrying going on this week. The House is going to take it up today, and it remains to be seen if they're going to be able to complete work on it by the end of the week. There is a partisan dispute over the disaster funding component of that, so there's some simmering talk about a possible government shutdown. We've all heard that before. But at the same time, I think everyone understands the the toxic nature of that after going through it earlier this year. So hopefully they'll avoid that and wrap things up on the CR.
Well, we had this sneak preview with the portions of the Federal Aviation Administration, about 4,000 people who are not involved directly in air traffic control, but they were furloughed, I think some of them for up to 10 days, and a larger number, maybe 75,000 private contractors who were working at and on airports. And I was certainly surprised by that the Congress would just leave town and leave them hanging. I was even more surprised about the back pay or lack of same.
Yeah, and I think this, you know, what we're seeing is amongst Republicans, this is basically a campaign issue that, you know, for a lot of Republicans, they are getting their street cred by essentially being unafraid to shut things down, put federal employees on furloughs and so forth, and that's in some ways a badge of honor for some politicians, I hate to say, but that's the environment we're in. So, you know, it seems like we're going to be seeing a lot of these standoffs more and more between now and the election.
As they say, this is not a drill, huh?
Right.
Well, Steve, thank you very much. We'll pick up with your colleague, Sean Rye, when we come back here on Federal News Radio, 1500 AM.
Government technology professionals should prepare to attend GovCom 2011, the new trade show featuring government audiovisual communication solutions at the Walter E. Washington Convention Center, November 1st and 2nd, featuring nearly 100 leading manufacturers and solutions providers showcasing the latest in audio, video, conferencing, collaboration, control systems, digital signage, and visual display technologies. GovCom will help government agencies and the military boost collaboration, enhance security, improve reliability, and cut costs. GovCom is your opportunity to see cutting-edge communications products, network with fellow technology professionals, and get valuable training from leading experts in government and entertainment industry. For more information and your free exhibits pass, visit govcom2mshow.org and use the code FED. That's govcomshow.org. GovCom is brought to you by Infocom International, the association representing the audiovisual industry.
Attention civilian employees of the intelligence community and the departments of defense and state. You could be eligible for affordable term life insurance from GEBA, the Government Employees Benefit Association, with coverage issued by Prudential. Learn more about this important benefit for government employees at GEBA.com/term life. That's GEBA.com/term life. Group term life coverage for GEBA is issued by the Prudential Insurance Company of America, 751 Broad Street, Newark, New Jersey, 07102. Contract series 83500.
This is John Gilroy from Federal Tech Talk. You know, I've done over 200 interviews here on Federal News Radio, but many listeners still ask, yes, John, but what does your company do? Well, my company is called Armature. For the past decade, we have worked with organizations to help improve the way they collect data. You may call it comprehensive data collection, data analysis, or even outcomes measurements. If your agency has any problems with collecting, analyzing, or displaying data, then please visit our website at armaturecorp.com. We can help.
How are federal agencies such as the U.S. Department of Energy managing for performance and results? How have the Recovery Act and the GPRA Modernization Act of 2010 changed the way federal departments operate? Join host Michael Keegan on the next The Business of Government Hour as he explores these questions and so much more with Jay Hoffman, Director of the Office of Program Analysis and Evaluation within the U.S. Department of Energy.
Retirement is expensive. You may need 70 to 90% of your pre-retirement income just to maintain your current standard of living. So how do you protect the money you've already saved from market fluctuations? How do you make sure you won't run out of money? Hi, I'm Mark Tabron. We'll tackle these questions and more every Saturday morning at 10:30. Learn how to protect and grow your money with me, Mark Tabron, on Federal News Radio, 1500 AM. Can't wait till Saturday? Then call me today at 301-773-3923.
Donating to United Way of the National Capital Area and its charities is an easy way to champion a cause. With every payroll deduction, you can be a knight in shining armor battling childhood diabetes or illiteracy, or a fairy godmother granting job skills, elder care, or shelter from domestic abuse. Choose CFC code 31408 and be a superhero to those in need in our community. No cape required. Amazing things happen when we stand united.
What Facebook has done, they're transforming advertising. With Google click-through, you don't really know who's clicking through. But with Facebook, you can so specify who's looking at your ads that it's extremely targeted. That's why Google is so worried, because Facebook has created this closed ecosystem. They don't allow Google search into their little private kingdom. And Google is afraid that the Facebook community will become larger than Google's.
Stratford University's Tech Talk Radio, Saturday mornings from 9 to 10 on Federal News Radio, 1500 AM.
Welcome back to Your Turn. This is Mike Causey. We're talking about the issues facing the federal family today, from pay to pensions. And my next guest up is Sean Riley. He's a senior writer with the Federal Times. Sean, are you there?
Good morning, Mike.
Hey, thanks for joining us. Listen, I know you're one of the world's leading authorities on the U.S. Postal Service. You know, it's got the second largest federal agency in the government, which soon may be the third largest if they have their way. They're talking about getting rid of tens of thousands of people, closing post offices, and eliminating Saturday delivery. All of this, where is it going?
I wish I knew, Mike. Members of Congress and the White House seem to have woken up to the fact that the Postal Service is on the path to going broke. We've seen a lot of activity all of a sudden in the last 2 weeks, but a lot of it going in different directions. Probably the most significant event developments to date is the White House, as part of its deficit reduction package going to this so-called Congressional Super Committee, came up with at least an outline of its own plan. There are an awful lot of details here that would need to be fleshed out, but as part of this plan, the White House supports the Postal Service's desire to go to five-day delivery, would essentially forgive about $11 billion in, or defer in any case, $11 billion in payments to its retiree health care fund that are due this within a week or so, and then next September, and then would allow, and again, this has yet to be fleshed out, allow the Postal Service to offer non-postal products while increasing collaboration with state and local governments. Also this afternoon, a House subcommittee has a markup or a vote scheduled on a competing proposal by House members Dennis Ross and Darrell Issa that would essentially require the Postal Service to be put under a specially appointed commission if it misses any payments to the federal government, such as the retiree health care payment that's due next week. That will probably come out of subcommittee, but it's and probably come out of committee as well, but it's likely to face opposition if it gets that far in the Senate.
Is the Postal Service the only federal operation that's required to pre-fund these programs?
As far as I know, yes.
I mean, I don't understand the logic of that. I mean, it's nice if you can do it, but if other federal agencies are not required to do it and don't do it, it seems that that's $11 billion that's, I don't know if wasted is the term, but it just seems to be pointless.
Well, I think the idea when, this was required under 2006 law, and I think the idea was, given that the Postal Service has an enormous workforce and generally is supposed to be self-supporting, unlike other federal agencies, the plan by Congress was, or the intent of Congress was to ensure that when all these hundreds of thousands of postal workers retire, that their health benefits are paid for in advance. And the Postal Service at that point, this is before mail volume started to, fell off a cliff, thought they could make these payments, but it's been increasingly arduous for them. They, said flat out they're not going to be able to make the payment due next week. Essentially, they'll use their term, they'll default on it. It's unclear what the legal consequence that would be, but it would certainly be embarrassing for a federal agency not to be able to make its legally required obligations.
I swore I would not use the cliche about rearranging deck chairs on the Titanic. But, it comes to mind in the situation. And do you think, and again, I'm not trying to be flippant here, but has anybody, you mentioned that the Congress and the White House seem to have recently discovered that, we have a postal service started by Benjamin Franklin, and we probably should keep it as a service. But it's almost as if they, for 30 or 40 years, they've forgotten it was out there. Has anybody stood back and looked at this and said, you've got the internet, you've got email, Twitter, people are paying bills online. The numbers you see are astonishing. The post office has to be completely have a redo.
No, in a word, yeah. I think the Postal Service attempted to do that last year with a strategic plan, but mail volume has declined even faster than they expected. That was expected at that point. And no, I don't think there has been any real effort or comprehensive effort to look at all the factors you're mentioning, because in part nobody knows exactly where all this is going, and so it's difficult to say where you're going to be in 5 years when we're not sure where we're going to be in a year or two. I mean, Facebook wasn't around a decade ago. Or Twitter, for that matter, was around 5 years ago, and yet they're accepted, widely used parts of electronic communication now.
When I was at the Washington Post, I used to get tons and tons of letters. At one point, we did something, and we got, 165,000 letters based on one column. The other day, I got a letter here at the office, and I was almost afraid to open it. I thought Unabomber.
Because, might have a white powder inside.
Exactly, yes. But you're right. I mean, the world has changed in ways that nobody could have foreseen. When you talked about the Postal Service selling other products, I mean, are we talking tires, makeup? What would they be selling?
Well, it's not spelled out here in this White House proposal. According to the Office of Managed Budget, they're going to come up, or White House officials, they're going to come up with more specific language at some point. But no, I think there could be some. One thing I think, if I'm not mistaken, has been discussed is coming up with some sort of secure digital signatures that the Postal Service could authorize. But that's really, but in this particular case, I'm not clear on exactly what they're proposing. And of course, once you start get into selling non-postal products, there's a good chance you're going to run into objections from people who are already selling those products.
Oh, absolutely.
In the private marketplace.
I can see, and the argument for the people in the private sector are, look, the taxpayers are paying the rent on these facilities and the light bill and all of that sort of thing, and it's unfair competition with me, particularly if the Postal Service was offering products or services that were less expensive than in the private sector.
Yeah, I mean, the Postal Service, you know, doesn't, as a rule, get, taxpayer funding, but certainly it does benefit to some extent from being a federal agency. And I think they, and just the idea of having government competition for products or services already offered by, you know, private sector firms will be certain to get the hackles up of some members of Congress.
Steve Watkins said that you had been tracking the continuing resolution situation. Are we, and again, I know this is long-range crystal balling, but the fiscal year ends September 30th. And given the mood of Congress and the fact that they're going to be leaving town soon, is it possible that there will be a government shutdown or a partial shutdown?
These days, anything's possible. And, you know, unfortunately, it's not that long, you know, it's not that long range. The issue here is, dispute over the amount of disaster relief funding that should be appropriated to the Federal Emergency Management Agency to cover, you know, the earthquake, the recent earthquake that we all felt up here in D.C., the impact of Hurricane Irene, the tornadoes down in Alabama and other states. The House has come up with one figure. The Senate has come up with a much larger figure. And then the question is how you're going to reconcile that, by September 30th, given, as you noted, that both chambers are supposed to be out on break next week. It's hard. It's, again, difficult to predict. My guess would be is that they will come to some sort of resolution on this for a couple of reasons. One is that disaster relief funding tends to be bipartisan, historically has been. Or support for disaster relief funding has been bipartisan. Two, some of the states that have been hardest hit, such as Alabama, Virginia to some extent, have Republican governors who presumably want to make sure that their folks are getting the assistance they need. And also, if you recall, there was a partial shutdown of the Federal Aviation Administration back in late July and early August after Congress deadlocked on a funding authorization extension for that agency. You had about close to 4,000 FAA employees were out of work for about 2 weeks. A couple hundred construction projects were shut down. Thousands of construction workers were out of work. And Congress took a beating for that, I think. Given that the institution's overall approval ratings are at 12%, I think they'd probably not want to see them go any lower.
Well, Steve was saying, too, that he thinks some of the GOP members are taking a beating, but that's part of the drill because they want to establish their street credentials and show that they really are tough. I would not have, if you had predicted the FAA furlough and the scenario leading up to it and the follow-up, I would have said, let's don't even go there. This is so silly. But to actually leave a critical agency like the FAA, leave 4,000 people, albeit not directly doing air traffic control, but some of them doing safety inspections. And some of those people, I understand, stayed on the job and worked really, I guess, in violation of various rules, but they worked without pay because their jobs are so critical. And again, those of us who said it's never going to happen, well, we were wrong, but the one thing we were sure of was that they would get back pay for that. They would be compensated because they were furloughed through no fault of their own, and that's not going anywhere.
Apparently not. Republican Congressman Frank Lobiondo from New Jersey introduced a bill last month that would compensate those furloughed employees, basically give them back pay for the salaries they lost during the furlough. Representative Lobiondo represents an FAA technical center in New Jersey. But so far, that bill has not moved. The last I heard from his office, they were looking at all opportunities to get it going, including the continuing resolution. But as far as I know, clearly nothing's passed at this point, and I'm not sure where that effort's going, and it would cost, tens of millions of dollars at a time when, there's a lot of resistance to new spending.
Yeah. Well, one thing I would think, the lesson learned from that for federal workers is that in the past, we've had shutdowns during the Clinton years and others. We've had shutdowns, but people always got repaid. Mm-hmm. And if you could handle the drama of it, most of them didn't even miss pay because of the way the pay periods are timed. Mm-hmm. So you'd have a nice week or two at Ocean City, free vacation, if you will. But the assumption always was that they would get the back pay. And now that this has happened, one of the messages, if I were a federal worker and I was going to be furloughed, I would immediately head for the unemployment office and sign up rather than wait to see, A, how long it's going to last, and B, am I going to get back pay? Because if they get back pay and they got unemployment, in most states they'll have to repay that. But, I mean, this could set up a whole new mindset.
I think so. As I recall, during the FAA furlough, I mean, the FAA officials were encouraging people, employees, to seek unemployment. benefits. And I think that will, you know, given that we are in, I think, uncharted territory to some extent, I think that will probably be the norm in the future if this happens. You know, if we get, you know, a government wide shutdown or even shutdown of a particular agency or agencies.
Great. Well, thank you, Sean Riley. We'll have you back next week and talk about this, and maybe we can get off this Johnny One Note thing and have some happy news for you.
Well, we'll see what happens. Hopefully we'll have some clarity on what's going to happen with the CR.
Thanks. See you right back here on Federal News Radio, WFPD 1500 AM.
And now, the Federal Living Report, brought to you by WEPA.
A call for more diversity in the federal workplace via executive order from President Obama. The President's Management Council, the Office of Management and Budget, the Office of Personnel Management, and the Equal Employment Opportunity Commission have to develop a four-year plan and issue guidance by November 16th. And it's not the first time a president has issued this sort of order, but President Obama says the government has to retain a more diverse workforce. I'm Amy Morris.
WEPA, a nonprofit association, has just announced another 25% premium refund. Since 1996, WEPA has returned over $58 million in premiums, and the average WEPA policyholder has received over $1,700 in refund checks. WEPA also offers life insurance at rates far less than the FEGLI program. Is it a time you considered WEPA for your family's life insurance needs? For better insurance, better prices, and better value, visit WAEPA.org. Once again, that's WAEPA.org.
Things just don't happen. You need a plan. A federal career can last 30 years or more, and so can federal retirement. Tune in each Monday at 10 a.m. to get the information you need to plan your course for financial security, solid benefits, and optimum health care. 100% focused on the federal employee for your benefit, presented by NITP, has the answers to your mid-career and retirement planning questions. Listen to For Your Benefit, Mondays at 10 a.m. on 1500 a.m. Federal News Radio for an hour that can change your future.
The Federal Drive is every weekday from 6 a.m. to 10 a.m. on Federal News Radio 1500 a.m. Hear interviews, news, perspective, and analysis from Tom Temin and Amy Morris. The Federal Drive team will help give you the important information you need about the federal government and how it impacts your organization or agency. Tune in 6 a.m. to 10 a.m. or go to federalnewsradio.com. The Federal Drive is sponsored by CDWG. CDWG, the people who get it. Government personnel must continue to achieve mission-critical objectives no matter their work environment. Video conferencing technologies provide a highly effective collaboration solution for federal employees affected by budget cuts, BRAC initiatives, and telework mandates if they are secure based on open standards and deployable in limited bandwidth environments. Polycom is the first video provider to have an ultimate HD portfolio that is JITC certified, offering real-time face-to-face communication without compromising secure networks or consuming excessive bandwidth. Polycom enables government customers to collaborate over voice and video anywhere, anytime, securely both inside and outside the firewall, offering high-definition video calls at half the bandwidth of other companies. To learn more, visit polycom.com/federal.
The Telework Center arms you with all the information you need to know about teleworking in the federal government. Go to federalnewsradio.com, keyword Polycom.
Attention civilian employees of the intelligence community and the Departments of Defense and State. You could be eligible for affordable term life insurance from GEBA, the Government Employees Benefit Association, with coverage issued by Prudential. Learn more about this important benefit for government employees at GEBA.com/term life. That's GEBA.com/term life. Group term life coverage for GEBA is issued by the Prudential Insurance Company of America, 751 Broad Street, Newark, New Jersey, 07102. Contract Series 83500.
The Pentagon and Beyond is brought to you by EADS North America.
The impact of the assassination of former Afghan President Burhanuddin Rabbani. Joint Chiefs Chairman Admiral Mike Mullen says the Taliban is shifting tactics to more spectacular, high-profile attacks and assassinations, and the U.S. and Afghan forces have to adjust. Mullen said at a news conference, commanders are working with the Afghans to shore up their personal security. Rabbani was killed by a man concealing a bomb in his turban. I'm J.J. Green.
Sir, we have multiple contacts bearing 050 at 30 miles.
When the Navy and Coast Guard needed a radar to perform critical missions, they chose the TRS 3D radar from EADS North America. Built to cut through clutter in a busy coastal environment, the TRS 3D detects multiple surface and air threats simultaneously, so our nation's defenders can respond quickly and keep us safe.
Sir, estimated intercept time is 2 minutes.
EADS North America. Commitment defines us.
Mike Causey here. Welcome back to Your Turn. Glad to have you with us. And I remind you that our shows are archived, all of them, so you can click on and listen anytime and pass it on to a friend. We get an awful lot of secondary hits that way. So thank you for doing that. My guest now is Dan Adcock. He is Legislative Director of the National Active and Retired Federal Employees Association. Dan, are you with us?
I am. Good morning, Mike.
Hey, thank you for standing by. I know you've been awfully busy. This is a good time of year. NARF changed its name several years back. It used to be known as a retiree organization, even though you have always had active duty members, but you changed it to National Active and Retired. And boy, what's going on with the budget now should alert people who are working for the government that NARF and other organizations should be taken seriously and looked at.
That's right. I mean, you know, right now, as you know, the president came out with his pay for his jobs bill on Monday, and unfortunately, one of the proposals puts federal employees in the crosshairs with a 1.2% increase that will be taken out of their paychecks for their that would be contributed towards the Civil Service Retirement Disability Fund, which is already fully funded.
Okay, and this does not either increase or decrease the monthly annuity of anybody, but what it does do, I guess, is permanently decrease their take-home pay by at least 1.2%.
Right. So, but actually, you know, when you also factor in the fact that because of the two-year pay freeze that was passed into law last December, they actually are paying more for a smaller retirement because since retirement is pegged to one's salary, and because salaries are being frozen, they're not going up as high as they otherwise would have been. It means that they're going to be paying more for a smaller retirement.
Paying more for less. Yeah. Okay. That's interesting and a sad way to put it.
Right.
I was talking with Steve Watkins from the Federal Times earlier, and he agreed with me that, and again, this is a relative thing, but that given what some people were anticipating, feds got off very lightly under the president's proposal as opposed to what might have been.
Yeah, I think that there's some truth to that. You know, there certainly are. So this is probably the lesser of many proposed evils that have been floating around. I mean, one thing that gives us a tremendous amount of heartburn are proposals that would affect the federal employee health benefits program, and that would affect the entire federal community, both retirees and employees. But I guess our takeaway from Monday on this proposal is that, you know, while it could have been worse, it still seems to be counterintuitive. If, you know, if the president's intention is to stimulate the economy through a Social Security payroll tax holiday, then why is it simultaneously increasing the payroll taxes on federal employees? So that part of it really doesn't make sense, especially when you take in consideration that we've already given at the office in terms of this pay freeze that's you know, that amounts to a $5 billion cut out of federal employees. And, you know, and I think the other part of this also is that as we've seen this movie before in terms of when the Congress has to deal with some of these very difficult decisions like making reductions to the large entitlement programs like Social Security and Medicare, there's such cry and outrage over those kind of cuts that they punt on those cuts, and instead we get the federal community gets disproportionately hit. So I think the other takeaway from Monday too is that, you know, if the president is going to endorse a proposal like this, then it puts his good housekeeping seal of approval on it, and it makes it easier for the Congress to go along with something like this. So it's very hard to put the toothpaste back in the tube once it's been squeezed out. And the other thing I don't think that's getting as much attention, but it's certainly going to be really devastating, is this elimination of the federal employee retirement's supplemental annuity payment. That's especially important as part of the three-legged stool that's required, that's really necessary for retirement. That's going to be especially hard on federal law enforcement and firefighters who leave government service, who are required to retire earlier than any other
their federal employees. This is a substantial chunk of their retirement compensation that their administration is proposing that goes away altogether.
That's right. This supplement is a cash amount determined on what your Social Security benefit would be at age 62. And if you've got the LEOs and the firefighters and others, air traffic controllers who are forced to retire, I think it's 57.
Right.
Then there's that gap between 57 and 62. So that maybe somebody will fix that, and maybe they won't.
You would think so. I mean, it seems that that proposal just wasn't really well thought out, especially considering that you have all these very critical mission type of federal employees like air traffic controllers and firefighters and FBI agents that would be affected by that.
Well, you were talking earlier about Feds taking a disproportionate share of the hits on this, and I guess it's simply a matter of numbers. If cutting Social Security or changing it or slowing the growth rate would be the logical thing to do because of the size. But politically, if you've got 60 million people getting Social Security versus 3 million federal workers who are not particularly well organized in groups and associations, so the choice is easy there.
That's right. But, we as an organization is trying to turn up the heat in the federal community. We are organizing and we're doing everything that we can to not only, build within our own organization and be organized in every congressional district in the country, but we're doing more than we ever have in terms of coalition building with all the other groups that represent federal and postal workers, trying to coordinate. I mean, I think for a long time we've done a great job coordinating the advocacy we do here in the nation's capital, but we're doing more and more out in the field with our field grassroots work, with organizing locally, with groups like the National Association of Letter Carriers or the American Federation of Government Employees. So, certainly the political reality is it's pretty hard to compete with a constituency like the older Americans and disabled that are served by Social Security. But we're doing everything we can to better organize ourselves so that our voice speaks louder than our numbers would otherwise indicate.
Yeah, that's right. That's what it's called, I think, the Federal Postal Coalition.
Right.
And it's 30 different groups. A lot of times groups you would not expect to be in the same room, but united in this. Your magazine this month, I think the lead article refers to low-hanging fruit. What's the deal there?
Well, it's what I was just talking about a few minutes before. That's this idea that we're unfortunately the political reality is that the federal and postal community is the low-hanging fruit in the budget process. By the fact that of the 45 proposals that the Fiscal Commission came up with last fall, this is, the so-called Simpson Commission, mm-hmm. that of the 45 proposals they came up with, the only one the president unilaterally embraced was the two-year pay freeze. And again, we've seen this before, back when we were during a similar period of fiscal retrenchment, back in the 1980s and early 1990s, federal retirees gave up $50 billion worth of $50 billion worth of cost of living adjustments, but Social Security was protected throughout that time. So, we just know historically that is the case. Members of Congress are famous for taking the path of least resistance, and so again, it's easier to go after 2.3 million federal annuitants and the likewise number of active employees than it is to be thunderstruck by 40 million Social Security beneficiaries. But, again, we're trying to do everything we can to be effective advocates on behalf of the federal community.
I want to ask you how that's going, but we need to take a short break here. Be right back on Federal News Radio.
The nation's largest intelligence event of the year returns to San Antonio, Texas, October 16th through the 19th. Network with professionals from the defense, intelligence, and homeland security communities at the GEOINT 2011 Symposium. USGIF's GEOINT Symposium features keynote speakers from agencies, combatant commands, and Congress, as well as panel sessions and breakout tracks tackling the critical issues affecting national security. Register now or learn more at GEOINT2011.com. That's GEOINT2011.com.
For more than 80 years, Motorola has been committed to keeping Americans safe. Today, Motorola Solutions provides interoperable communication systems that are built to open standards so federal, state, and local agencies can work together in emergency situations and be their best in the moments that matter. That's why first responders and others dedicated to keeping citizens safe choose Motorola Solutions, because they know Motorola Solutions always puts public safety first, just like they do. To learn more, visit MotorolaSolutions.com/80.
Hi, this is Wayne Zell, host of Blueprint for Wealth, every Saturday here on Federal News Radio at 10 a.m. Please join me this week for my special guest, Stephen Black, litigator and employment law specialist with Odin Feldman and Pittleman. Blueprint for Wealth is brought to you by Odin Feldman and Pittleman, located on the web at www.ofplaw.com. Full-service law firm. Give us a call at 703-218-2100.
Federal employees. With a 2-year pay freeze, rising health care costs, and potential changes to retirement annuity calculations on the way, recent financial events may have you concerned. First Command Financial Advisors understand the federal benefits system and can help you maximize the value of your benefits. Visit federal.firstcommand.com for an office near you and to request a complimentary financial consultation. That's federal.firstcommand.com.
First Command Financial Planning, Inc. Member SIPC and FINRA. First Command is not affiliated with or endorsed by the U.S. government.
Meeting mission goals through technology, brought to you by General Dynamics Information Technology.
The Department of Health and Human Services wants to use information technology to give patients greater access to their own health records. The agency is proposing new rules that would allow Americans to get their test results directly from labs electronically and securely. HHS is also creating a template for electronic personal health records. The idea is to standardize the information in a simple way, similar to nutrition facts labels. HHS thinks they'll help build public trust in personal health records.
General Dynamics Information Technology is dedicated to providing the latest, highest quality information technology services and resources to help organizations meet their mission objectives. Large-scale IT systems and communications networks are the strategic and operational heart of defense, intelligence, civilian government, and private business. They require the expertise of a company that delivers results. General Dynamics Information Technology, information technology, and professional services. Go to GDIT.com to learn more. That's GDIT.com.
Government technology professionals should prepare to attend GovCom 2011, the new trade show featuring government audiovisual communication solutions at the Walter E. Washington Convention Center, November 1st and 2nd, featuring nearly 100 leading manufacturers and solutions providers showcasing the latest in audio, video, conferencing, collaboration, control systems, digital signage, and visual display technologies. GovCom will help government agencies and the military boost collaboration, enhance security, improve reliability, and cut costs. GovCom is your opportunity to see cutting-edge communications products, network with fellow technology professionals, and get valuable training from leading experts in government and industry. For more information and your free exhibits pass, visit GovCom2mshow.org and use the code FED. That's govcomshow.org. GovCom is brought to you by Infocom International, the association representing the audiovisual industry.
In April, former federal CIO Vivek Kundra gave an update on the 25-point plan to reform information technology. During that update, all but two objectives were on track, including reducing duplicate data and consolidating data centers. With Kundra's departure and Steve Van Roekel's appointment, how will agencies continue to drive IT management reform in 2012? Join AFSCIA Bethesda September 22nd at the Bethesda North Marriott for an update. Register today at afsciabethesda.org/sepbreakfast.
Wake up and drive in with Tom Tamman and Amy Morris on the Federal Drive. It's your early line on the day ahead from your trusted advisors. Tom and Amy give you a full view of the issues. Find out what your colleagues in other agencies are up to and what policy and congressional developments mean to you. The Federal Drive with Tom Tamman and Amy Morris. Weekday mornings from 6 to 10 on Federal News Radio, 1500 AM.
Mike Causey, Wednesday. Welcome back. Glad to have you with us here on Your Turn. I'm talking with Dan Adcock. He is Legislative Director for the National Active and Retired Federal Employees. NARF is one of the 30 groups in a coalition called the Federal Postal Coalition, and they are zeroing in on the various commissions that are looking at ways to save money, and they want to make sure that a minimum amount of the savings come out of the hides of federal workers who've already had a two-year pay freeze and have given up that. That's permanent, a permanent pay loss, if you will, and it'll mean smaller benefits in the future, smaller retirement benefits in the future. Dan, I want to ask you something. This latest iteration, this we call it the super committee, the super commission, bipartisan, bicameral, House, Senate, Republicans, Democrats, and they have a deadline of, I think, November 23rd to make certain proposals, and then the Congress has a deadline of sometime in December to act on these or not. If they
This is a test of the Washington, D.C. Metropolitan Operational Area Emergency Alert System. In the event of an emergency, this system would bring you important information.
Well, that'll get your attention. Dan, you still there? Are you?
I am, yes.
Can you come back, return from the shelter, and we'll start talking.
Right.
No, we're talking about we had the Simpson-Bowles group set up by the White House, which came up with some recommendations. Not much happened out of that except a two-year pay freeze, as you pointed out. You had the Ryan budget proposal in the House, the Republican plan. Nothing has happened with that yet. You had Vice President Biden's Blair House group from the Hill and the executive branch, and that came up with some proposals, but nothing really happened. Now we've got this deficit committee, this super committee, with its deadlines. My understanding that if they do nothing, and these commissions are good at that, if they do absolutely nothing, that there will be, is it $1.3 trillion in mandatory cuts?
That's in that neighborhood.
Yeah.
But you know, as you know, this is basically, it's very similar for those people who are the listeners that were around working for the federal government in the mid 1980s. This is similar to the mechanism that was used with the Graham-Redmond-Hollings law, where if the Congress fails to act, then the repercussions are that there's these automatic across-the-board cuts called sequestration. But in back in 1985, Social Security was protected, but everything else was on the table, and that's why in 1985 federal retirees lost their COLA, their cost of living adjustment, for the full year. This time is different because federal civilian retirement, including cost of living adjustments, and the federal employee health benefits program, federal pay, all that would be protected this time if the super committee fails to report out legislation to cut the deficit by $1.5 trillion. And then those cuts, that automatic sweep sequestration, those across-the-board cuts, they don't occur until 2013. And so in theory, the Congress could change the law between now and then and reverse those cuts if they decided to do that. And that's certainly a possibility, given that it will be an election a year. But, you know, the thing is, I think that there's some people hoping that that's the way it will play out. But what will happen is that everything else that's available to cut, and that's going to especially be discretionary spending, which of course is day-to-day operations of the federal government, which includes the salary and expense accounts of each federal agency, then there's going to be a disproportionate cut to those accounts. And we, you know, one of the things that has been accomplished, you know, we went through the litany of all these panels that, you know, have made fairly large reduction proposals. But one of the things that did happen as a result of this, the debt increase law that became law back in August, is that there are pretty big cuts already out of discretionary spending that will be implemented. implemented through the appropriations bills that have to be passed by the end of this month. So we hope to dodge a bullet on the mandatory side of the budget, which includes federal retirement and health benefits, but the problem is that the process that's been set up is really going to take a whack at the salary and expense accounts of each federal agencies, and you know that has the potential of affecting job security in the federal government.
Well, there are a number of proposals, and some that I'm sure we haven't thought of or heard of, that the super committee could consider. But of the ones that are out there sort of floating in the ether, they've been recommended by the Simpson-Bowles group or the Ryan group or the Biden group. What are the ones that scare you the most?
The number one proposal that scares us the most was something that was in the Simpson-Bowles commission, and that would be to index the government share of federal employee health benefits program premiums based on the percentage growth in the gross domestic product plus 1%. And when you look at that index, it's almost always historically under what healthcare inflation is. And so what the government pays, the government generally pays about 70% of health insurance premiums for federal employees and retirees, and retirees and employees pick up the remaining 30%. The government share would be capped, and that every year there's a disparity between that cap, that the GDP plus 1%, the percentage share that employees and retirees pay would go up. And so, you know, today it's a 70-30 split. It means that, you know, it wouldn't take very long for there to be a 45-55% split between what employees and retirees pay towards their health insurance. And it just, what it will do, especially for people who are on the lower end of the wage scale, lower end of the annuity scale, it's going to, you know, over time, it's going to make health insurance unaffordable, and that would just be devastating to the entire federal community.
So would that mean that under that scenario, that the government, which now pays about 70% of the premium, would wind up paying 45% of the premium?
Well, it would pay about 55% of the premium, but it could get to that point over, you know, a longer period of time, because you're going to lose every year that is part of the law, that the government contribution is capped in that way, it snowballs. It just gets worse and worse, you know, the longer the proposal is on the books.
Is that what they call the chained CPI?
No, the chained CPI is different. That has to do with how COLAs are established, and it's a different measure of the consumer price index that, you know, supposedly takes into better consideration what's called the substitution effects, that when you go to the grocery and buy chicken over steak, that particular factor is better considered in what the government, how the government measures inflation. But what happens is that when you look at how the chain CPI performs, it results in a lower index than the current CPI, which would reduce the cost of living adjustments not only of federal civilian retirees, but also of military retirees and Social Security beneficiaries.
And I think that's the third rail of American politics. But that one, just looking at the numbers, Social Security, military and civil service retirees, that would, I would assume, produce the biggest savings.
I can't recall exactly what that is, but because it affects, you know, all those three programs, Social Security being the biggest, it will bring in a tremendous amount of cost savings.
Okay, what kind of intelligence are you getting, if any, from this this super commission? Are there any leaks coming out of it? I seem to be reading the same thing over and over again, and it seems to me to be pure speculation.
Right. As part of our advocacy, we're talking to the members and the staff of the super committee, and you know, the feedback that we're getting so far is it's very early in the process. There have been public meetings, there have been private meetings. I think their starting point will be the previous work done by the Fiscal Commission, done by the Vice President's Blairhouse group, done by the Gang of Six. And so that's why, you know, all these proposals that we, you know, like the one the President just released on Monday, these are the kind of things that are going to be on the table that could potentially affect the federal community. But, you know, the atmospherics are – the political dynamic here is going to be difficult because of the fact – because of the much larger issue on whether there should be revenue provisions in this and whether there shouldn't be, and whether the committee really can get to a majority on some kind of compromise.
We'll see. Well, Dan, you got the last word. Thank you so much
okay.
for being with us. We'll see you here next Wednesday. Have a good week and be safe.
Thanks, Mike.
Thank you.